Welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here again with us tonight. This is a really special Tech Doctor. It's not like any that we've done before. We actually have three Tech Doctors with us tonight, and we're going to be talking about a topic that I've been interested in for many years, not necessarily technology related, but a topic that has to do with gender issues, with women's issues. And I became interested in this topic in terms of technology a few weeks ago when there was a posting on Twitter that I saw talking about an article that was over on the TechCrunch blog. The article was called "Too Few Women in Tech, Stop Blaming the Men." And it really struck me as an interesting article. I think maybe I would have liked it if he would have stopped before the colon and just said, "Too few women in tech." But unfortunately, it went on from there. And then I heard a podcast that Chuck Joyner does called The Mac Jury, where he had some women on his podcast talking about this article and reacting to it. And these are women who are in technology in the mainstream Mac field. So I decided from there, somehow I had this late night thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to explore this topic from the point of view of women who are involved in technology but who happen to also be blind and also who are involved with access technology? Does gender make any difference in this field, or what is it like to be a woman in the technology field? Those are the kinds of things that we're going to explore a bit this evening. And so one of the things I did was I started thinking, who do I know who's female, who's in technology? And I thought of three people that I have gotten help from over the years about various technical issues. And I asked them, would they come onto this podcast? And I was very pleasantly surprised when they all three said, yes, they would. I'll start out by introducing them and asking each of them to take a moment and say hello and fill us all in a little bit on their background and a little bit about what they're doing now. So just going in random order here, why don't we start with you, Holly? Holly from the Screenless Switchers podcast. And I have gone to Screenless Switchers many times to get help with Mac issues, and I've sent other people there. And so I know that's a real area of expertise that you have, but tell us a little bit about who you are and your background and what you're up to these days.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. I graduated from a university with a degree in management information systems. I've been doing podcasts for the last 5 years now, almost 5.5 years. I do, like you said, the Screenless Switchers podcast, which is a podcast about Mac-related and now iPhone and iPod Touch and iPad and all that good stuff, really Apple-related devices. And my boyfriend Darcy and I are starting to learn to program for those various devices, and that's what I'm working on right now, is learning how to do Objective-C. So that's been a challenge.
Well, very great. And it sounds interesting that you've just continued to expand. And I know when I first started with the Mac, it was one of the very first places that I went to learn some tips how to find my way around VoiceOver. So thank you for all that work that you've done throughout the years, and I'm really glad you're here. Let's go now to Ricky Inger. And Ricky works with Saratech and does all kinds of different things, as well as a biweekly podcast, who she co-hosts with Michael Loft for Saratech. Tell us a little bit about where you're at these days, Ricky, and your background.
Sure. And first, I want to say thanks for having me. I have always been interested in technology. I can remember my first Apple IIe, and that love of technology continued, and ended up graduating college with a degree in computer information systems. I went on to do a little web design, and I worked for a company doing training for people with physical disabilities who wanted to enter the job market. So I did not only assistive technology training, but interview skills and various other job market skills as well. And I sort of took a bit of time off as a stay-at-home mom, and I had sort of a consulting business in my profuse amounts of free time where I did AT training. And again, as you said, I now work for Saratech.
Well, you're the woman that I went to when I first got my iPhone because I knew you had really explored accessible iPhones. And so you were a lot of help to me when, in those first few days when it was like, what the heck? How do you manipulate this touch screen here? So I thank you for that. Last person is absolutely no stranger to the Tech Doctor podcast. She's my Tech Doctor partner, and yet tonight gets to sit in one of the three guest of honor seats and doesn't have to do all the Tech Doctor stuff that she normally ends up having to do. So welcome, Jenny Axler, and tell us a little bit about what's going on with you these days.
Well, it's a pleasure to be in the guest chair, first of all, and not have to do all the editing and regular Tech Doctor stuff. No, actually, I love doing that too, because I am just as much into technology as these other two. Interestingly enough, though, I have no technology background. I graduated with degrees in English, human services, and religion. So I sort of came into the field later. I ended up marrying a truck driver, and I stayed home, and I was looking for something that I could do from home, so I started doing medical transcription. There wasn't a lot of accessible software for medical transcribing, so I ended up just having to learn a lot of things, and I sort of fell in love with the technology field. I've always kind of been a gadget geek. I like PDAs. I used an Apple IIe as well, and I used a Braille and Speak, so I started out a long time ago. Like I said, I have no technology background as far as my training is concerned, but learning to work around the medical transcription issues, I sort of really learned a lot about Windows and various things and just kind of fell in love with it. I ended up beta testing the LevelStar icon and then ended up doing a podcast on that, and they hired me to do tutorials. And with my English degree, I had a background in writing, so I ended up doing technical writing. And it's really kind of blossomed from there. Now I do co-host the Tech Doctor podcast. I've recently accepted another tech support position where I'll be doing, again, technical support, tech writing, tech training, and probably audio production as well.
I take it you concluded that the Tech Doctor podcast didn't pay you enough, so you had to get a job.
Oh, well. You know.
So it goes.
She gets enough in accolades, but it doesn't pay the bills.
That's right.
No, I don't think the electric company cares for accolades at this point. I thought next we would really, if you all don't mind, kind of open this discussion up. And I don't know how this will work or won't work on Skype. Just sort of let it be a discussion free for all. Anybody who wants to say something, just say it. And if it turns out that we're all stepping on each other too much because of delays or whatever, then I will, you know, step in and try to direct traffic a little bit. But what about this not enough women in tech, stop blaming the men idea? What about that in general? And also, what about gender as it relates to you all and your own experiences with technology? Let's just kind of see what you have to say about those things.
Well, I saw the source of the article and I was like, oh, here we go. Because TechCrunch kind of has a reputation of being a little bit sort of controversial. And I think maybe some of the wording was a little bit like, look at me, I want to get some attention for my blog kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, they do that.
Yeah. So I wasn't as enraged as I could have been because I was like, oh, consider the source.
I don't think it was so much that it enraged me. To me, it seemed like there was a lot of ignorance, a lot of misunderstanding about, you know, a lot of the article actually dealt with women not wanting to become entrepreneurs and start their own businesses and so forth. But I mean, really, when you start to think about it, I don't think it's an issue of not wanting to. It's an issue of, I wonder if it's harder in many ways for women to get loans, to get support from backers, to develop the kinds of things that you kind of have to develop almost, it seems to me, in our culture. You have to be part of the good old boy network. What do you think?
I think that does happen to some extent. And I will say that I'm always surprised when people say, oh, it's great to see a woman who is interested in technology and is passionate about technology. I wish there were more of those. And I'm always so surprised because for me, it seems like such a natural thing to do. And I don't think there's anything inherently feminine or masculine about being a gadget freak or being interested in technology. I think it's just more that men and women probably approach technology and being entrepreneurs and that sort of thing differently. And there may be women who are discouraged just because they think it might be harder. They think they might come up against these challenges and men being unwilling to respect them as the wonderful geek girls that they are. With that said, I haven't encountered a lot of that when I'm meeting people for the first time. I don't feel like they're looking at me thinking, wow, you know, she's a woman. She probably can't be that much of a technology person. It's more that they're surprised that I'm blind and into technology.
Well, that's another piece of the equation that certainly I want to bring into it is the blindness piece, because it's fascinating to me to wonder about, is blindness more of an issue than gender? Or are the two together, you know, do they equal quite an issue? Or is there any real equation there in the first place? I don't know, but it raises a lot of questions for me.
I've found that the reaction is different depending on where I am. You know, if I'm walking into a mainstream store, for example, I don't think people expect me to know what I'm talking about. But as soon as I open my mouth, they do respect me. I have found that, yes, they are surprised, but it seems to be pleasantly so. And that kind of like what Ricky was describing, and whether or not that has to do with being blind or being a woman, I think they're kind of surprised at both. I always say that people don't expect you to be both intelligent and feminine, and someone forgot to tell me that I wasn't supposed to do both. So
I love that.
because yes, I'm not planning to give up either one. So
right.
But I find that, like I said, the reaction is different. I have not found that I've had any trouble in the field, really, although I have found that, okay, for example, with Levelstar, no problem with them hiring me, as far as I didn't feel like there was any issue with my being a woman whatsoever. I did find that some users questioned my abilities. So that was very interesting. I would find that there were users that might have had biases, but in general, the people in charge don't. With this new job I took, it was interesting because it's with a foreign company, and they actually had no problem with my being a woman, but they were surprised because they've dealt with another American company, and all of the tech support people were men. So they really, really expected it. And again, this was a pleasant surprise to them, but not a problem.
The people that you encountered at Levelstar that you felt like had a problem, was it because of gender or because of blindness?
No, because of gender, because these people were blind themselves. These were users of our products. And it was more that they didn't trust me that I knew what I was talking about.
Whereas they might have trusted a man.
A man, I think, a little more, yes. Yes.
I think that's interesting. What would any of you think is the reason behind that? Why do people tend to expect men to be better in these types of fields? I would hope that we're past the era where people assume that women are best suited for staying in the kitchen. You know, I think there is more respect for women in general and the types of things that they can do, but why is it that technology or engineering or anything like that seems to be considered by many people as a more male-dominated profession?
You know, actually, I think it has to do with the type of women. For example, all of us here, I think, are very young and vibrant sounding and very feminine. And I've noticed that this doesn't seem to be the case with the more androgynous types.
Are you saying that you don't think that people expect an expert in technology to be feminine?
Yes. I think that they expect, if there's a woman in technology, they expect her to be very androgynous. And so I think that there is less trust when you are more feminine. There's this idea that if you have a soft-spoken voice, that people, I think that you're not as intelligent, or if you giggle, then you must not have a brain, you know? that kind of thing.
One of the actual parts of the article talked a little bit about, you know, the fact that women are feminine nurturing means they don't have the entrepreneurial spirit. I couldn't disagree with that more.
I completely disagree as well. And I think that people, unfortunately, tend to equate risk-taking and an entrepreneurial spirit and that kind of thing. They equate that with being very loud and aggressive. And that doesn't have to happen. There are certainly loud and aggressive women, and there are women and men who approach being an entrepreneur or being an expert in their chosen field in a little more laid back way that's no less successful for all that.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious to know, and of course this is probably isn't a question that we can answer here because we're not these people who think like this, but why does it have to be exclusive? Why do people assume that it's got to be one way or the other? Why can you not have both strength and femininity? I think that you can, and I think many women do, but a lot of people don't assume that, you know, that you, if you are very feminine, that you probably aren't very intelligent and strong, and you really can be both, and many women are.
So do soft-spoken men have the same problem?
Why?
They attempt to start a business or become leaders in technology? I mean,
I think they can.
Actually,
yes.
I believe they do. Yeah.
Well, so I think there are just some people who don't have that, both men and women who don't necessarily have like the entrepreneurial spirit, who are also really successful. I don't necessarily think everybody, I don't think everybody can be an entrepreneur just because some people don't have the, that's kind of my philosophy on it. Like some people just don't have that.
Right. But it's got nothing to do with gender. It's
right,
not
right,
gender related.
That, I think,
it's
right,
personality.
And I think maybe people are just prone to stereotyping in general. Somebody who is in technology should either be someone who lacks social skills and, you know, sits and programs all day and can't interact with humans well, or somebody who is, you know, an absolutely ruthless business person with a great idea, and they find people to sort of carry out their technology dreams. So those are the stereotypes, and maybe people are expecting those types of things and overlooking the people in between those extremes.
I think that's a really good point, because I think that a lot of that is sort of stereotyping. And also, I don't know, like, this is kind of going back to something we talked about before. A lot of girls maybe aren't interested in science or aren't encouraged to do technology, and they think, well, it's too hard. Or I think sometimes people in schools aren't encouraging the girls to sort of get involved, and I think that's part of it. Because I wasn't interested in technology until I graduated high school and got my first computer with Windows and the internet, and my interest sort of exploded then because, you know, I was in music before, and that was kind of where I was, and computers were not something I was interested in. So I think sometimes maybe we're not encouraged. I don't know.
Well, this last Saturday, I had breakfast with one of the computer scientists here at the university where I work, and he's a bit older than I am. He's in his probably late 60s, and I told him I was going to be doing this podcast, and he was kind of intrigued by it. He said, you know, in the days before computer science was formalized, when it was just people working with computers, there were way more women in the field than there are now.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting.
I was kind of intrigued by that. I was like, when it became formalized, when it became a science, that really changed the playing field somehow for women.
That's very interesting. I wonder if it's because previously computers were sort of a fringe thing to do. People sort of became interested in it, not through popular culture or anything like that, but just because of a natural bent that they had in that direction. And then once things became popularized or mainstreamed or whatever the term is, I wonder if people began attributing older stereotypes to that, like, well, women can't be scientists, and this is a sort of science. So,
exactly, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Holly, your point is a good one also. It's probably true still, even in 2010, that women aren't encouraged so much to do maths and the sciences and to prepare for a career in computer science, although I would argue that there's so many ways to be involved with the technology that it doesn't you don't have to go that one route necessarily. But even so, it certainly is sad if it's true that that women are not being encouraged to take that curriculum.
You want to hear something weird? I guess I'm the exception to the rule in every way, because I was actually encouraged to do more math and to take physics, and I hated it. I didn't want any part of it, but I was very good at it. And so everyone's like, you really should do more of this. You should do more of this. And I rejected it. And now look at me.
So the English major could also do math and physics, huh?
Yes.
I was horrible at math. And that's, I really wanted to do computer science, but my university, you had to take 6 semesters of calculus, and I was horrible at math, and I'm just like, I don't think I can do 6 semesters of calculus, so I didn't go that route.
I never really wanted to be a programmer. I did it for my degree, but I was always more interested in the different ways that a computer could be used as a tool, and of course, I was just fascinated by technology in general, so I did the math and things that I needed to do, and I wasn't horrible at it, but I wasn't excellent at it either. And I was just excited that there was a way beyond sitting in front of a keyboard and programming, and I have a great deal of respect for people who do that. But again, I was just excited that there were ways that I could be involved with technology without doing that particular thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, there are a lot of different ways to enter this field, and you all have carved your own way, your own niche, by your various interests and pursuing things that you thought would work. And I think that's another piece of what the whole spirit of being an innovator and a creative person is all about. I'm still kind of sitting with this whole issue that we sort of looked at both sides of, though, about on the one hand, it seems like, you know, people react to femininity in technology. On the other hand, it may not be necessarily gender, because men can show a feminine side as well. But I don't think that fully explains it. There is something about our culture, about the way we react to women and technology that is at least a bit gender biased or gender specific, isn't it? I mean, it sort of feels that way.
If there wasn't, there wouldn't be such the surprise that Ricky and I experienced.
Yes.
It would be normal and it wouldn't be a big deal. But there definitely is that. And granted, yes, the reaction is positive. But the fact is that the reaction exists tells you that there is a bias.
Yeah, you're right. What really brings it out is the surprise factor. Mm-hmm. Why should it be a surprise?
Right.
I don't really have a theory as to why people are so surprised and why women are so rare in technology. And I have actually been referred to as the female of the company that I work for. And I mean, it is a very small company and everyone else is male, but I have found it a little bit shocking to be referred to as, oh, yes, you are the female in the company.
I've heard you referred to that way.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that really has nothing to do with my skill or my value to the company, I hope.
Other than shock, do you have other feelings about it? Do you react to it in any other particular way?
I'm a little bit annoyed that needs to be pointed out. I mean, again, I am the only female, and it's perfectly factual to say that. But whenever I hear myself referred to in that way, I sort of feel like every other contribution that I make is not quite as significant as the fact that I am the only female.
Wow. That surprised me. I was expecting you to say, I feel like the contribution that I make is colored in some way because I am female. I guess that is, in essence, really what you're saying.
It is, in a way. And maybe I put a little bit of a negative spin on it just because I am so shocked every time someone says that.
But perhaps it feels a bit negative to you. I mean,
it does. It feels like I've been slighted in some way, as if someone is saying, oh, that's amazing for a girl.
You're the token girl. It's like affirmative action or something.
That's right. But at the same time, I am hopeful that if there are women who are considering becoming active in technology, I'm hopeful that it is a help in some way for them to see me and other women in the field as being successful.
Well, Ricky, I don't know, you know, really that, you know, this background of the other people in your company per se, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised to, if we didn't learn that you may be the most formally trained technology person in your company.
Yeah, we have people from all different backgrounds in the company, but you're right. Many of the people in the company are like Jenny in the respect that they have come to the field after having been trained to do other things.
I wonder if part of it is going to be generational as well, because kids now are growing up with things like the internet and computers, and it's just part of their lives, whereas at least for me, you know, I didn't start doing computers until I was in school. Of course, I started young, like first grade, you know, with the Apple IIe. But, you know, these kids are growing up literally from the crib with, you know, computerized toys and all these computerized things. And I wonder if that's going to make a difference. Because really, we're only looking at the last, you know, 30, 40 years where women have even been able to be involved in business and that sort of thing. Because, I don't know, if you watch shows like Mad Men, which are really supposed to be accurate, period, accurate, women are not very highly regarded in that particular show. So I just wonder if it's going to be more of a generational thing.
That's very interesting. And I think you have a good point. I think that there are many people who grew up in an era where women were very often portrayed in the media and so on as being competent, yes, but what they were competent at was sort of keeping the home together and being very successful at running a household and keeping that all organized, and not so much in business and certainly not in technology. But as you say, now everyone is growing up surrounded by technology, and you almost can't help but be involved with it in some way.
Right.
I don't have a daughter. I have a son, but, you know, and he's about to turn 18, and he's very tech savvy to a point. But he didn't grow up having to figure out MS-DOS and AppleSoft. He doesn't know very much about what's under the hood. And I worry that sometimes for what that's going to mean for this generation and technology.
Well, I think it matters less, though, as time goes on. Like, there are always going to be people who build this stuff, but software is really where things are at. I mean, if you look at phones now, like, it's all about the software. It's not really so much about the hardware. It's going to matter less and less if you know everything there is to know, as long as you know something.
So it's kind of like the car. You don't,
right.
You don't need to know anymore.
Well, maybe. Technology isn't just one niche field anymore. There's so much involved in technology that I think people are going to have different roles.
Well, it's a good point, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future. I hope you're right. I hope that there is much more of a blending and much more of an equality. You know, I was reading a book called A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn.
Oh.
And when I was looking at that just the other day, I was reading a chapter called Surprises. And one of the things that are discussed in that chapter is the women's movement. And in 1911, Helen Keller said, "We have the vote. What does it mean?" Or "We want the vote. What does it mean?" And she was kind of getting at, you know, so what? We can vote, but it's not going to make that much difference. Here we are 100 years beyond that point. And yes, I think we've made some progress, a lot of progress, and no question but what women are in a better place than you were 100 years ago. But in other ways, I don't think we've made enough progress.
I don't think so, but I think it's on its way. And I've been thinking about this, Ricky saying, you know, I don't really have a theory behind this. And then talking about, you know, Mad Men and the role of women in the 60s and what they were expected. And then again, the pleasantness of the surprise that people find, you know, in our intelligence and in our ability. I think what that tells you is a couple of things. I think that the theory probably is that women are expected to be nurturers and caregivers. And when they see someone who they think would probably fit that role in a role of being intelligent, assertive, successful, et cetera, it does surprise them. But it does appear that for the most part, people are open to it, and it's a pleasant thing. They like seeing it. So I think what that tells you is that the doors are open. And so I do think that in the next couple of generations, this is really going to become more of a non-issue.
I wonder if the blindness is going to be more of an issue.
I agree.
Yeah.
It is.
Blind and women?
I don't think so.
I think blindness in general.
Doesn't matter about the gender.
I think if someone gets past the blindness, then the gender at that point is really not an issue. That can be a challenge because people are expecting a blind person to, and I'm talking extremes here, people expect a blind person to have someone who lives with them and picks out their clothes in the mornings and perhaps types their emails for them and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it is truly shocking. I mean, I've been on a plane using my iPhone and people would come up and say, I notice you have a dog. Yes. I notice you're using an iPhone. Yes. And, you know, I wait just a minute to respond to see what kinds of questions they're going to ask. And finally, they'll say, how do you do that? A lot of people never even get to that point. If you ever want to really depress yourself, you can go and do a search on Twitter for the word blind, like blind woman or blind man, that kind of thing. And you will see people posting things and there'll be snide comments about blind people. And then they'll say in this really horribly grammatically incorrect, ha ha, they can't read it anyways. And it's basically they don't think that blind people can read Twitter or browse the internet. If it's the general public, you can't think about it so much. But when you're going on a job interview and the person is more interested in A, how you managed to get there, and B, how you might even begin to use a computer, much less how you could be qualified for this high-level tech position, that's a lot to get past sometimes. And, you know, it just takes patience and a willingness to educate, but it's definitely there.
Unfortunately, I think it's one of those situations with blindness where employers, they look at it and go, if I were blind, I couldn't do this.
Yes.
So how can you? And they really cannot imagine how they would do it because they're not familiar with alternative techniques. They have no clue how they might go about doing things in other ways but using their eyes. So they honestly don't know. They really honestly don't know. And it is hard because they come in with a very, very strong bias because they, you know, make assumptions about themselves. And so trying to educate them within a matter of an hour can be very, very difficult. Getting them to be confident in you and the fact that you can do the job, they might even admit that you have a brain, but they're still going to wonder how in practical terms you're going to manage any kind of position.
I think there's a huge psychological factor also, and that is that people are terrified of blindness and of becoming blind themselves. And their anxiety gets so high that they can't hear what you're saying about how you're explaining how you can do this job and how you can compensate for this and that. They can't believe it because they just can't assimilate that information.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I've seen a lot of really positive articles in the tech press of late about like people using iPhones and like visually impaired people, blind people using iPhones. And I think maybe that's helping because I think people can actually look at their iPhones and turn on VoiceOver and play around with it and see how it works. You know, it's not specialized there. And I think maybe that helps, but I don't think it does enough yet.
Yeah, but I think we're just beginning that time of mainstream this, mainstream that. I think it's the dawn right now. You know, it's just coming.
Oh, yeah.
It's just starting. I hope so too.
Because it's so important, I think, that it be mainstream.
Yeah, I was talking to someone today, a blind woman, and she said that her fear was that while this seems to be an opening here with Apple and their accessibility, her fear was that it will be temporary, that it will just disappear and go back to the way it was, whatever that means.
I don't think we would stand for that. I mean, I think that, you know, Apple could at some point decide just to completely drop accessibility. I don't see that happening, but it could. And if it did, we've all become so accustomed to using something that is mainstream. And it's something, by the way, going back to Holly's point, I think the iPhone in the press and its accessibility, it's very attention grabbing because here you have this big piece of glass and, you know, a touch screen is something that you would think is just so visual. And then here all these blind people are using it. So that's raising the level of awareness. But in any case, if Apple ever dropped this, we've become too accustomed to having a mainstream solution. And we would find a way as a community to convince a business, whether it be Apple or somebody else, that this was something that made good business sense and needed to happen.
And I think that it's so affordable. You know, they say that the blindness market is such a small percentage. And I think that is true. And I think when you're trying to sell something like a note taker for, you know, $5,000, it is harder. But we're talking about, you know, a mainstream product at a mainstream price that anyone from being completely blind to low vision can use. I think that the population that actually does utilize it is large enough that it would make a difference in the market. And I do think that Ricky's right. There is absolutely no way that blind people are going to stand for that. You know, if it goes away, there's going to be a major, major uproar. And I also wanted to add something to Holly's point about mainstreaming too. I think besides the attention in the press, I think just the fact of us using mainstream products in the public eye actually also helps us to be seen on an equal footing because we're using things that they recognize. You know, for so long, we've had to use these weird, you know, newfangled pieces of technology that nobody recognizes that, you know, look like some kind of outer space machinery. And, you know, the fact that we are able to actually use what's in the normal market, I think also helps our image.
Yeah, well, because it helps us as well, because we can talk about things that people know about. You know, we can talk about applications that we're using that are mainstream.
Yes.
And we can talk about, oh, did you try this application on your iPhone? It's awesome. You know, we can participate in
pop
culture. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I started an iPhone users group at work, and I'm, of course, the only blind person there, but I can, you know, really help my colleagues with their apps and things like that. And it's a very cool thing to be able to do.
That's an excellent point.
It's really kind of fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like this has turned out to be less about the problems of gender, I think, than I expected it might have been. It sounds like we're beginning to talk like we see a real bright future for women and women who are blind in technology. Is that the flavor that you all feel? Is that how we're going to leave this in a minute? Is that what it feels like?
That's definitely what it feels like to me. And I do want to reiterate that if there are women listening to this who are questioning how difficult it would be to go into a field related to technology, you know, the interest is there, but they're concerned about the types of attitudes that they will encounter, I would say absolutely go for it. You're not going to encounter nearly as much resistance as you might think.
No, there's definitely the bias, but it's more about surprise, not discrimination. So, you know, like I said, I think the doors are definitely open.
And I think we've also really begun to conclude that the bigger issue is the blindness. Mm-hmm. It's harder for blind people to find jobs and to make headway in whatever field they choose to go in. It's not impossible. And I encourage everyone to do it, you know, to find a way to do it. But it takes a lot of willpower and courage and strength and stick-to-itiveness to make it happen.
You brought up a great point about fears, about people's fears. And I think that is the problem of the bias as far as the stereotypes of people with any kind of disability. I think that unfortunately it really tears at people's insecurities, and that is not something that is easily changed. It's not gender roles and even civil rights, you know, as far as these things are not nearly as threatening to a person's well-being as far as changing their ideas.
I think those things are the software, and the fear is the hardware. It's hardwired into us.
That's right. And so how do you combat that? And that is a question that I really don't know how to answer. And I think that as much as our stereotypes about gender are changing, and I do think the doors are open, I don't know how the doors for whether it be, you know, blind people or deaf people or people with any disability, I don't know how they're ever going to be completely open because exactly of that hardwired fear that people possess.
As human beings, we fear anything that's different from us.
Mm-hmm.
Or that we don't understand or that we can't make sense of or that we think is threatening to us in some way.
Yeah, and it really takes a mature person to be able to look beyond themselves and let that go. But there are plenty of people who are just normal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really think that it is more a normal trait. So I don't mean to insult people who think that way at all, because it's much more normal than not. And so how you combat that, I don't know.
Well, I hope you combat it in at least in one way by talking about it the way that we're doing, and by being willing to examine it and explore it and say this is going on, and maybe, you know, somehow that makes it just a little less scary the next time you encounter something that's different from you. I hope it works that way. If it doesn't, my profession of psychology is in big trouble.
I think you're absolutely right in that talking does help a lot. And the biggest challenge is, as a blind person, not to approach each new person you meet with this preconceived idea that you are going to encounter those attitudes and, oh, great, here we go again. You know, I might as well just be bitter at the beginning and get it over with. It's a real challenge to approach each person that you meet with a positive attitude and be ready to help them through that initial fear response. Sometimes, many times, it doesn't work, but just as many times it does. With just a little effort on your part.
That actually feeds right into what I was going to say.
Oh, nice.
One of my favorite quotes says, "There is no known capacity on the limit of the human mind to grow, learn, develop, and change." And you always have to approach people with that. You know, they might have that fear response initially, but everyone has that ability to grow, develop, learn, and change. And you need to give them the opportunity to do that and be willing to educate and be open, because you're right. Yeah, we're going to often experience people who are not willing to do that, but we will just as often experience people who are willing to do it, even if their initial response is one of fear or even of saying, "You can't do this." You know, a lot of times they are still open to learning that you can.
Yeah, I think the really successful people that I've known are positive and are open, and they don't let something that frightens them or maybe that they don't understand prevent them from doing what they set out to do. They learn to turn that stumbling block into a stepping stone. And I think that's really what a lot of this is about. And I'm very pleased and surprised at kind of where we ended up here. But it seems like maybe this is a good place for us to bring this to an end. And I just want to ask one more time if anybody has any final thought, final comment that you'd like to be sure and say before we end the Tech Doctor podcast for this time.
Well, said it all.
Hearing none, it sounds like we have said it all. And I really want to thank you all for doing this. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you all tonight. And I would like to invite anyone who would like to pursue this further to feel free to email us at techdoctor123@gmail.com. That's techdoctor spelled out, TECHDOCTOR 123 at gmail.com.